Okay, we move on now to two sessions on the high resolution monitoring of the Marsite scale jet Fermi era. Start with Eduardo Warsh. Talk with the same title.
First of all, let me thank the organizers of having thought about me to give this talk. I tried to do what they wanted, in contrast to Bill. Well, or what they imagined that it should be. I also thank Thomas, because at least from 1 year ago, he has given part of here. But let's see what has been done. The first comment is when we see about the radio gamma connection, we are checking radio monitoring in the light curves and so on. This will be not part of this talk or this session, but will come later. We will concentrate about the high resolution monitoring of the audience. Okay? Well, you have seen this plot before, radio sky with some Mojave jets. Not much to say about that. The only thing is that, well, these bright spots that dominate the extragalactic gamma sky, if you zoom them with the radio interferometer, you see these beautiful beamed jets. Everything is beamed here, and that's one of the important topics. We also just heard to Benoit about the lab catalogs. We just also learned that some of the nice radio galaxies with some monitoring have dropped out. But whatever the important thing here is that these numbers are not updated. We have just seen a new figure. Most of them are VLACs. We have also flash spectrum radio quasars. But the important thing is, as you see, apart from the galactic plane, we have all these objects, and some of them, or many of them, can be observed by VLBI. Well, we have learned that VLACs, lasers, but also quasars are very common gamma emitters. And as Matt pointed out, as mentioned by Thomas, we confront big biases in all directions when considering them. And this can also explain why we see some things in the SEDs, why we identify some objects in one of the groups, radio or gamma. If we go to the characteristics of blazars, well, they are suitable to be observed by VLBI. One of the things is because they have a high minus temperature. And it's also interesting because we are addressing the jet, which is, if we think in the SEDs, is an important component, which is, as you have seen, sometimes not modeled properly by the SEDs, but permits to disentangle the jet emission from other components in the emission of the whole AGN. And we have seen also that in gamma, HSP are predominating more than half of the VLACs that have been observed by LAC. Well, I have taken this cartoon. Also, Thomas showed the same. And the discussion is, where is gamma emission coming from? From here. Well, we are going to concentrate into the forget gamma in this plot now. What happens here outside of the jet that can be proved by VLBI? And there are these open questions. Why are the gamma ray loud? Can we say something about that with the radio results? What is the production mechanism? We'll see. Okay. Summarizing, there are different instruments at high frequencies observing these objects. We don't talk about the X-ray now. There is a clear connection. And it would be great to have the VLBI arrays look into the skies in the same way as Fermi. All time, all frequencies, over many octaves in the musical keyboard, this Fermi, and everywhere with polarization. But since resources are limited, that cannot be done. And then we have several attempts to get the best out of these regions of the sky where you have some of these guys. Well, VLBI, this is for the high energy people, the VLBIers, the black belt VLBIers know that. Core shifts can be addressed by multi-frequency observations, and then you can determine another physical parameters there. You can have a measurement of the compactness in the core, outside in the jet. You can see some things are changing with time quickly, and then you have not in the frequency axis. If you sample the sources in time, you can see these things changing as you see motions of blobs, blobology, some people call that, in the sky with changes. Maybe there are some shocks, probably they are traveling downstream from the jet. If you observe with polarization, you can also say things about the orientation of the magnetic fields. With changes, you can see, have explanations on the trajectory and so on. You can associate mechanical jets, you can claim the binary black hole in the center of the AGN. You can relate, if you trace back things that are moving downstream, you can relate the ejection times with flux density outwards, and this is interesting then to be compared with another regions of the spectrum, as it has been done in the past with X-rays or with gamma rays, in the past and present, sure. And then you can see the interaction between standing or moving shocks, and if that tells you something also about other regions of the spectrum. Well, just summarizing the LBI, we don't have, as I said, full coverage of the sky all time at all frequencies, but we have some antennas in the north. The southern hemisphere is full of water, and then you have some dishes there, but the southern sky needs to be addressed differently. And there is a trend at present that is in Europe towards telescopes connected by optical fiber, and you have also in remote places some small dishes that can give you things that you didn't have for covering the Fourier plane with the geodetic telescopes. And this is especially important for the south, as we will see later. Okay? This is the size of that. It's just related to the effort that has been done with gamma, as in, as nothing else. SPLB also is a dedicated instrument. We have also the LBA in the south, and we have millimeter observations. Well, they are, you can locate them as you want. Then most of the work that is presented here has been done with this instrument on this continent where we are. And if we check about what can be done with VLBI, you take your images in time, in frequency, you combine them, and you can measure some things there directly. You can measure them, and you can model it. And then you measure directly things like heart speeds in the jets, flux densities, kind of temperatures. You can compute opening angles, about opening angles in Mojave Dash. You can see if there is a misalignment between the jets at parsec and kiloparsec scales. You determine spectral indices. If you measure polarization, you can see circular linear polarization. And then you can determine other parameters. There are more than these ones, like the viewing angle, the Lorentz factor, magnetic field. You can do many things. Then, if you go to the gamma properties, you can that or not? Is that in my list or not? If there are flares, if there is flux, the flux is luminosity, is photon indices, and then looking to the SED, you can determine other parameters. And then you try to, with all this information, if you can do something about that. You can go there, put them in a matrix, and then check if you find some correlation among them. And this is a bit cheating because this matrix has also the time axis in 3D and has different hyperspaces if you have different optical classifications. And then all the papers you will see are just addressing histograms at the top, saying, we detect it or not, we compare, we see this trend, as it is done in many of them. Or you can make correlation plots and see if they are statistically significant. Think carefully about the biases, about the subgroup you have, and with all of that, as Thomas was showing before, you can do a lot of plots and learn something. This is just a childish approach to that. Okay? And don't forget the time axis. This is important because you have light caps, motions, variability, and so on. Well, just for the fun, one can cook all these things, see all the relationship between the different parameters as they are there, just to cook all the data. Also, one can get additional information like the variability Doppler factor from flux density variations. You can relate all that, and at the end you get all these parameters that you see most of the work about that. when I was thinking, how should I give an overview of the effort that has been done, I thought, well, there is this and this program. Probably people will be annoyed because I forgot them and so on, but at least I wanted to put the main ones that you hear. If somebody's forgotten, please forgive me, and because it's not intentional. We have the ones that are being done at present, the four that are running simultaneously to the Fermi observations, and we have also earlier data that one can address, like, for example, the whole geodetic database of images of the celestial reference frame. But if we put an axis about the number of sources, I chose the square root because if not the plot gets messy, and we put wavelengths there, it would be great to have things at shorter wavelengths, but we don't have them because it's very difficult and challenging, but we have several surveys there. And in the vertical axis, we put the number of epochs, which is average and not so complete. We have the dips, before that was done just before the launch of Fermi. We have an extension of some deep sources, as far as I know, where with 100 sources that have been checked now. And one can also check all data from the CJAF survey and learn something about that. In the southern hemisphere, this is the other color, we have Tanami with 80 sources. And actually, this plot should be not a rectangle, but a trapezoidal thing, because you have some sources with many epochs and the others go down. Then we have Mojave with 300 sources now, and this really should be like that, because there is a cadence for observing some sources and some others, and you can see the sizes and the axis information that you have. There is a low redshift Bologna survey now, observing some of the sources. We have this axis higher, and then a more limited number of sources with the 7 millimeter monitoring done by the Boston University. We have some sources observed at the TED now, very few, but interesting. And if you put them in a table, I put in boldface the ones I will report a bit more quickly. And you have another ones, and here you can put also ICRF and other of these surveys using geodetic data. Okay, this is the wavelength. Number and some incomplete, very incomplete references. Usually the samples have been chosen about flux density considerations, spectral index, and they are complete statistically, but of course you don't have all sources in the sky. Well, about the goals of every of these surveys, the thing is monitoring. See how are the kinematics, how is the changes in polarization vectors, and with Fermi together, we can see if there is some correlation between jet activity and gamma ray emission. This is the main one of the things you can notice. Okay. One of the deep survey, which more than 1,000 sources, one epoch at 5 gigahertz. And as far as I know, Greg can correct me. This is being continued, but the subset observed also with polarization, I think, at least 2 epochs so far. And you have the reference there. And recently, and I don't want to spoil it for talk later, has been some report just published about things that you find. Brightness temperature of gamma sources is higher than non-gamma. As I say, you have yes and no, you put an histogram. Okay, no, but it's just for joking a bit. But there you can learn a lot of things and you see what is the brightness temperature of the detected and not detected, and see that there is a trend that higher and more compact sources have a higher, they are favorably detected by Fermi. Also, you have about the opening angle distribution. We will see that also later. The apparent opening angle of these jets, when they are pointing towards you, there is a sinus of theta, the equation. It seems that they are emitting more strongly in gamma rays. This is on the dips. Many other results are there, but it will be presented later. There is also the study of some EB blazers in the LBA by with some sources and some new ones have been added now, as far as I know, I've checked, and they are slow. When you have very high energies, it seems that all these jets have a small apparent speed. And there is also an effort by Giroletti et al. Observing guys like that since already the 90s with the European VLBI network. Well, I put this because it's fancy and Matt and it's nice, but Matt will talk about that later. And there is also results about polarization that will be addressed by Tadiki. But around 300 sources are monitored now. There's a high quality jet motion because it has been checked, the robustness, you need more than 5 epochs with some criteria until you believe the beta apparent I give for this guy is a good one. And then with the well-defined sample, you can do statistics and track some things. And as other projects, as also Boston, calibrated data are made public. Then you can download them and do your own analysis if you want. Well, I stolen this message from you, I think, about jet kinematics. You have a lot of features in a lot of jets showing, displaying these motions. I could put a movie, but I didn't have the humor to load there and check that things work. What you see is always these blobs traveling away, and then you try to relate them with things happening in the gamma. One of the results is that the characteristic speed describing every jet are peaking at around 10C, and you have even some points but higher. And you see for the detected sources. Doesn't need more explanation because if not, I spoiled your talk, Matt. The viewing angle is also interesting. Thomas Avolainen found an interesting result here. Is that in the moving frame, it seems some favorable direction. There are some sources missing here. Why? Well, maybe there are explanations. But they tend to be clustering in some viewing angle. Okay? And also it's interesting here. In the past, we have seen this is the gamma ray to radio ratio, and this is the apparent object opening angle, published recently. I think that week the paper came out with a reference. You see that all the highest opening angle jets are gamma bright. And, well, about the histogram, you have it here in this Puskarev poster, showing the same result about the opening angles with respect to the texture. That was very well put there. It organizes. Well, we can skip. Late, important. AGN have higher apparent speeds. Boston University laser monitoring, 35 lasers, 43 gigahertz every month, lots of nice data with polarization. And this has the advantage that you can look deeper into the jet because of the opacity effects. It's at 7 millimeter. You can learn things about new components coming out just next to the core. And several studies have been presented individually in publications. And I can address to that quickly now. But just as a highlight, you have these guys. This is what you get. You monitor that, and you see how these new components, or when they cross a stationary shock, they are related to gamma activity. Then gamma activities coincide with production of knots and the passage through features in the jet. Tanami in the south, two frequencies. This is a complicated plot, but well, the important thing here is you have the LBA antennas. You have two additional ones in Chile and O'Higgins, and I think more are coming, but we're not going to talk about that. 80 sources are being monitored since last year with the idea to have every 2 months. And these antennas here in this area provide a very good resolution at X-band that was never before for VLBI images in the southern hemisphere. And data are coming too. And you can also do spectral index maps, as you see here. Okay? One could give another talk about individual source studies, and there could be infinite. Some one can go from the closest non-placer ones, like the MIT-7. Maybe, as I told me, maybe there is a relationship between HST1 to understand what happens with the core in the radio and gamma emission. And a guy presented
Well, 384 have also many studies, and you have results in different surveys and projects. But this is a result presented last year in Bonn about relationship between a component and gamma activity. 5 minutes. I put this here because it's recent. That shows that sometimes you can do nice things. Leonid, we talk about that. With 10 minutes later, if you take this guy, which has been observed at very high energies, and you just check in the archive of the PLPA, you can find that, it looks like a blazar is in the Perseus cluster, not far away from QC84. And then you can see that it has compact emission and has a jet. And what wonders me is that nobody checked that with PLPI ever.
As I say, you don't have the whole sky all time.
BLAC, there are gamma flares reported. If you check the web page, you have all the list of ATELs reporting about flares on these gamma sources, and then you can compare them with your surveys and see what's going on and your apparent speeds and so on. Here is an example of a spectral index map by the last paper of the dynamic collaboration on this topic. OJ287 from the Boston group. The only thing I want you to bring with this complicated plot is, well, a new component pops up, and you can relate this new component with gamma data and radio light curves and see that, yeah, the ejection of the flare is probably related. The ejection of the passing through a stationary shock is probably related to this gamma activity. That has been shown in several sources, like this guy with his own number. Easy to remember. 3C273, there are also several studies there. This, I just chose this by Lysakov and Kovalev, presented in Rome a month ago. You see a Fermi ejection, and you can compare Fermi ejection. Increase in brightness. That's it. And you compare with the VLDI core at 7 millimeters, and you see that there's probably some relationship in the activity of that. This guy also was just reported by Thomas, 3645, famous quasar, that has some activity also related to gamma. This is one, just to put one of them, this narrow line survey, with this phone number, some observations by Giroletti et al. Just published with the EVN to show that what is the structure and what's going on with this source. There are many others, as I said. You have talks and papers, 454.3, maybe the most famous one. I just let that in the slide with other ones. Centaurus A, Cornelia Miller can tell about that. Some TV guys, Markarian and so on. These also famous sources with gamma activity. And I just put that because it didn't fit anywhere. A non-AGN, that's killing the title of this conference, but it's an interesting object observing the radio and with gamma activity that nobody knows if it is a pulsar nebula or a microquasar. There are some new data interesting also with the Fermi folded data that can tell that maybe there's some evidence that this is a microquasar. We just put a paper on that. Well, if you put all these things, as I say, with the time axis and so on in this plot, you see that there are some correlations there. Some people find the correlation between fluxes and some not. This is the total index. And you can try to fill that, and it's permanently under construction. If someone has the humor, can keep this table, and every new paper that comes can take something there to learn something. Okay? Then, the title of the transparency was facts, but I don't have a lawyer at home, but then I thought about some evidences, not facts, the proven facts. Well, we have some changes in the parsec scale emission related to the gamma activity. Seems to that we begin to believe that. There are also changes in polarization. We have seen this plot by Alan of changes in the EVPA, the polarization angle during a flare. Yeah, well, Doppler factors are higher at gamma active stages. Warning about the biases. And there is also the famous beta-loom plot. Beta apparent versus luminosity can be done, and there are also, like in the radio, no sources with low luminosity with high apparent speed. If one puts the questions famous, it's Fermi divorces Jansky. Well, gamma flares originating relativistic shocks, maybe,
as a collision, maybe or maybe not. What distance are they? Is the main energy dissipation type? Well, depends who you ask and the model you apply, and they don't give any answers. I was referring to lawyers in the previous one. what is the dominant emission mechanism? Well, we know the radio.
There are good evidences for the gamma. And what remains to be done?
Well, keep collecting data, keep analyzing them, of course. We would need more frequent millimeter wavelength images to address the core, and it's important to have good WLB data at both hemispheres to address all the sources being observed. Intensive campaigns also are interesting on selected sources. Also checking the archives, which is a great thing to look how has been this guy doing for the last 20 years, LBI, and how is the the turnover frequency, the turnover flux with the spectra, all these things. If you can do that, to relate that also to gamma, but not one. And there is also important, it's being done, to add all the information you get from the single disc monitoring into the picture, especially the high frequencies where you see the variability and things are probably most related with the core, but not only. And with all that, maybe in the 10th Fermi-Michelsky meeting at the end of this decade, we'll learn more things. And one thing that we will have there, that I didn't refer, is that for tracing the birth of components with time, you need to check the source for 10 years. If Fermi was there since 2008, we have to wait maybe 2015. We begin to learn many things at millimeter, as Alan and Svetlana have shown. But with Mojave and other programs, we keep accumulating it, and then we will trace all the ejection epochs with Fermi flares or with any gamma flares.
And I think that's everything I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you. You've already covered a lot of territory. Questions? Comments?
And the authors are here, then I don't need to answer.
If you look today, all cousins or all components,
of course,
because some components are so fast that you will be not able to see them.
We have the problem that which frequency you choose. If you take 7 millimeters, the component disappears, yes, after a while. And if you take long wavelengths, you see them a lot of time, but then you have to wait now to see when they were ejected. Then, which are best? But you're right.
Some are not so fast.
Some
are
so
long.
Yes.
Work. I don't know who should do that.
Sounds like a
volunteer. Yeah. You have all the calibrated data from Mojave and Boston, and those are coming there. Of course, the analysis you do, this is now being exploited by the group, but to have all in, this is, if you ask me, could we have all the optical monitoring data from all the quasars in somewhere concentrated?
Yeah.
In the virtual observatory, but Matt has a comment.
It's much easier gamma ray wavelengths and only got one instrument.
Well, that's
not address that to the telescope.